Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Talking Torquay. I'm Matt Parkman, broadcasting from Manchester. Some short distance to my south, a few hundred miles, is Ben Curry, who you heard from on Sunday, but we didn't get a chance to introduce him to you all. So, Ben, who are you and why are you here?
I am Ben Curry. I've been a Torquay fan for 24 years. I'm a very boring person with no friends, and I love talking about Torquay United, so this podcast is ideal for me.
Absolutely perfect, isn't it? Incredible. And to continue our international theme from episode 1, joining me from about 1,500 miles to the northeast, if I remember from geography class in school, is Tom Vosbo, all the way from Sweden. Tom, hello. Who are you and why are you here?
Hello, I'm Tom Vosbo. I'm basically here because I have a lot of opinions on Torquay and I need someone to listen to them.
Good news. Yeah, I don't imagine there are too many people in Sweden who fulfill that brief, willing to listen to you talk about Torquay, a club they've probably never heard of.
No, exactly. And I've bored my girlfriend to death with it. So now it's time to actually speak to people who might actually listen to me.
Amazing. Cool. All right. That's good news. Tom usefully has prepared a few notes for us on the Barnet game. So I'm going to be quiet and let him tell us all about that.
So obviously, Barnet away last weekend. I think we were all hoping for another 3 points following 2-0 draws. Went into the game playing bottom of the league, a side that had lost to Dover only on Tuesday night. And I think it was safe to say we're all feeling pretty confident. However, we in Torquay United fans, we kind of knew that that wasn't always going to be the case. So went into the game, hopefully looking to come back to winning ways. And one point that I think was crucial is the fact that Barnet, were having lost 3-1, were going to have to be looking to bounce back. And I think the main thing that we had to do was get a crucial early goal. I think I'm still not sure how Street missed his first opportunity where he had a header from edge of the 6-yard box. I'm pretty sure heading it towards the goal would have been simpler than trying to lay it off. I think it was to Whitfield. But anyway, moving on from that, we then managed to get our first goal, and it was a lovely goal, really, because it was 7 minutes through, and Asa Hall picked up in central midfield and cut apart the Barnet defence very easily. And then Whitfield still had quite a lot to do, had a lovely left-footed finish from outside the area into the bottom corner. And I think at that point, we started to hope that this could be potentially another Hartlepool. However, again, reining in ambitions, we kept level-headed, and I think the main aim of the game was to just sort of then see it out. And I think Gary Johnson would be very happy with that first half performance. I think we limited Barnet to very little. They had a few crosses into the box, which I thought were dealt with perfectly by Cameron and Sharing again, who are both solid. And going into halftime, 1-0 up, looking pretty comfortable. And we came out in the second half and it was much the same again. I think we looked like we were just in control from the minute we scored, really. And we rounded it off nicely to win it 2-0 with a great finish from Jake Andrews. It was good to see Adam Randall, who I thought had a great game at right back, his driving run down that right-hand side to cut it inside. And I mean, it was a great finish, wasn't it? Right into the bottom corner. And we come away with a 2-0 win. I think it's the kind of result you compared to like a Mourinho side who would always want a perfect 2-0 away win. 2 goals, none conceded, and we managed to finally get a proper look at Street starting up front. We've spoken about it before that Josh Humer has had his criticisms, and it was good to see Street come in and try and take over the mantle. And I think he had a couple of opportunities which he did squander, but I think all in all it was a pretty comfortable performance. I think both managers afterwards were pretty much in agreement with that, and not too much else you can really ask for on an away day against bottom of the league.
Yeah, I think there's the temptation when you are when you're at the top and scoring a lot of goals and everything else, to see even an away performance against a team right down the bottom as a chance to do, as you say, another Hartlepool, get 5, 6, 7, go nuts completely. But of course, football doesn't really work like that. You very rarely get, I mean, Yeovil aside, you don't tend to get scores like that in our division between teams you would expect to get scores like that against. I mean, sort of even last night, the Johnson has mentioned about, oh, we don't want to do a Man United ahead of the game. Well, Man United went to Sheffield Wednesday and managed to lose 2-1 to a team with one game in 18 calendar months or whatever, and then beat Southampton 9-0 in the next game. Now, if you were going to lose one and win one 9-0, you'd say it'd be the other way around. But that's just not really how football works. So, no, wasn't surprised that it finished in a 2-0 scoreline. What I was pleased with was the difference in the ability of the two sides. We weren't lucky to win that game 2-0. We probably didn't deserve to win it any more than that, but we never got out of second gear and didn't have to. All we did was turn up, do the bare minimum just about to eke past a team who didn't have a single effort on our goal of any real note all afternoon, and come home again. I was very happy with that. That did me. Perfectly okay with that. I didn't expect us to put dozens past them, even though they do concede a lot of goals and we score a lot. I didn't want us necessarily to go there and make a fool of them or embarrass them or anything else. I just wanted us to win a game, and win the game we did.
Yeah, and I think as well, going into it off the back of 2-0 draws, it wasn't good again to see such a solid defensive display, and McDonald in goal really confirming now that he is number one. Four clean sheets in a row up until that point. I think as well, it's a cliche, isn't it? But you can only play what is in front of you. And I think you can go around and you can say that the performance wasn't up to certain standards, but at the end of the day, we did get the 2-0 victory away from home. Managed to still give Little a few more minutes at central midfield. So I think he's sort of slowly getting back to being able to do 90. I think he's still slightly off the pace from what we've seen him before. But all in all, it was a very solid, and it was a performance of a side that does look like they're going to comfortably win the league.
I agree with what you both say, that Barnet were a very, very poor team. And we didn't need to exert any energy or too much energy in order to beat them. Bearing in mind that this game came in the middle of a run of 5 games in 15 days, you don't want to be knackering yourselves out when you've got another game against Altrincham in 3 days' time. So without saying we did the bare minimum, I think it was a very professional performance. 2-0, clean sheet, never looked troubled, no injuries, no bookings. And so it was just thoroughly professional. Go in on a horrible, wet, windy day, get the job done and get out there as quickly as possible, get home, get some sleep and get prepared for the next game.
Yeah, I think that, to be honest, if that had been Dave Thomas's write-up in whoever he writes for now, I don't think you really would have wanted your money back for the paper, would you?
What I would say is when you're top of the league, you're there to be got at, and every single team in the division is going to raise your game again, raise their game to try and beat you, because it's a massive coup to go and beat the league leaders. So, you know, you have to accept that. And whilst Barnet, you know, they got behind the ball and they frustrated us, and it's down to being patient. And then, you know, we scored the goals exactly the right times. Whitfield's goal early on meant we controlled proceedings for the next 80 minutes, and then made the game safe for 10 minutes to go. So in terms of, as what Tom said, that is a classic Mourinho at Chelsea sort of performance. You know, not spectacular, but get the job done. And if you do that every single week, you win the league.
Yeah, what we ended up with, unfortunately, was the performance against Altrincham that we served last night. Starting without a recognised striker on the pitch was either going to be a stroke of genius, or it was going to be something, a stick that we were going to beat Johnson with when we came off the pitch, and it was going to depend on the performance and the result. And unfortunately, for whatever reason he did it, he needed to find a better way around the problem, because it didn't work. We looked lost up front. We had no real direction to our play. Passes were going nowhere. I've never forgotten Martin Ling's thing of pass with a purpose. I can hear it in my mind every time I watch a footballer just play a kind of pointless, nothing ball, just square or whatever. You think, well, what was the point in that pass? and Martin Ling's thing of passing with a purpose came into my head over and over again watching last night's game, because we were firing passes into each other, which we had to do because Altrincham had done their homework. They man-marked us across the pitch for 90 minutes. They must be exhausted today. Their players will be absolutely knackered with all that effort. And then a long journey home to get to back up to Manchester. And they won't care. Obviously, they've got 3 points, but they did a really good job nullifying all our threat. We did half the job for them by not having anybody on the pitch to be a focal point of the attack. If not as a physical presence, I don't mean we needed Uma or Street as somebody to hit with a ball, but who was playing up front? We didn't really seem to know. There was talk of it pre-match being the usual 4-4-1-1, just with Little in the hole behind the Lemon. But how many times did Whitfield pop up in the middle? Nemain seemed to be playing narrow. So we had this odd sort of nobody taking charge as to who was going to be our main goal threat. Regardless, we went a goal up 22 minutes in, a pretty cynical foul out on the right. Good delivery, and it was our only good delivery of the afternoon. It was something else that really ticked me off yesterday, was the lack of quality in our set pieces. Got a good ball to the far post. Their goalie made maybe a bit of a hash of it. I probably need to see it again, but Carl Cameron anyway ended up scoring with his with about his third bite of the cherry. Managed to stick the ball in the net. I was waiting for a flag. I didn't think that the officials were going to let the goal stand on the basis that the goalie was flailing around on the ground. So was Cameron. Inevitably, boots were near faces. I figured the flag would go up or the referee's whistle would go. It didn't. We got the lead. And apart from having hit bar, which is quite a big apart from, I'll grant you, but apart from having hit the bar with what must have been a deflected shot, I can't believe that Macca just stood and watched it, hoping it was going to go over. Altrincham hadn't really troubled us. They hadn't particularly looked like scoring, despite playing quite well. 10 minutes later, for no apparent reason, Schering, who got dragged narrow from right back all night, we'll talk about that in a minute when we get on to the second goal, he somehow managed to sort of just bundle into a bloke, nowhere near the ball, no attempt at a tackle, just sort of ran into the runner and hoped that the referee wouldn't notice. Gave away a penalty. I mean, I said penalty, I think, before Schering had even made contact. So obvious what was coming. A ball whacked into the back of the net. Really nice penalty. McDonald had no chance. Could have had Peter Schmeichel in net and he wouldn't have saved it. And so you're thinking, well, okay, fair enough. At that stage, naively, I was thinking, if we can get one before half time, we can probably see this game out pretty comfortably. Nope. No chance. Again, from only their second effort on target, incredibly, 45 minutes, 44 minutes, whatever it was, ball just kind of swung out to that left-hand side. Schering was caught narrow again, four men marking one in the middle. I don't know who marshalled them to do that, but it certainly wasn't anything that Aaron Downes has taught them to do. Matey gets the ball on the right-hand side, or on his left, our right, just pops it in the top corner. Altrincham aren't very far from me, and we go sometimes when, not now, when we're allowed to go, we go to Altrincham for a 3 o'clock kickoff and then off to the Manchester Storm for the ice hockey for the evening. It's a great day out. So I've seen quite a bit of Altrincham, and they always do play really neat football. And that's the type of goal I've seen Altrincham score time and time and time again. They're really adept at it. They always play really neat, sort of passing, moving football. The difference between sort of them and us was they just worked harder than we did. Second half came and went. I mean, there was nothing really to say about it. We tried going 4-4-2 with Street and Waters up front, which was actually a combination that I think a lot of us wanted to see. It didn't work because we just didn't play very well. We couldn't really find a man with a pass. One or two of our players, I'm not going to name people individually for things that don't go so well, but one or two of our players, and they will know who they are, couldn't control anything. Just bloody hopeless. Every time a pass went into them, it bounced off a foot and went away, or you know, somebody got a toe in, or we tried to, how many times did we try to turn our man yesterday without first having got hold of the ball? We were trying to operate 2 or 3 seconds ahead before we'd done the basics of getting a foot on the ball, getting it under control. So, yeah, changes didn't work, didn't changing shape, changing personnel didn't work. And in the end, to be honest, Altrincham didn't, they worked very hard, but they didn't have to be particularly good or particularly threatening to see it sew up a win. I think they might have maybe had one other shot on target apart from the two they scored, which isn't a criticism of them. They did, as we had done at Barnet, they did what they had to do to win the game, and they deservedly go home with 3 points. And I'm sure they'll be absolutely delighted with that.
Oh, I completely agree. I think Altrincham deserved the win. And they, the most disappointing thing is they didn't have to work hard, or especially hard for it. You know, I think for me personally, I was surprised to see us with no striker up front, simply because I would say Gary Johnson's main advantage as a manager is man motivation. And I just think that sends out completely the wrong message to Rob Street, to Billy Waters, and possibly to Umara, who wasn't in the 16, whether that's an injury or a caution, I don't know. But it just speaks volumes that he would rather try Conor Lemonhay-Evans up there as a token striker than players who are used to leading the line. And I've seen criticism of all three strikers in recent weeks. And obviously, they're not Danny Wright. But if Danny Wright was available, we wouldn't be playing that. We wouldn't be trying out that experiment for love nor money, because we know that that's formation to work. You need an actual striker up there who knows how to lead the line. And in putting Conor Lemonhay-Evans up there by himself and just booting long balls, I mean, from the kickoff, a long punted ball just straight out for a goal kick. I mean, Danny Wright wouldn't have got that. So what hope has Conor got of getting that? But, you know, this season, I would say our best player creatively has been Lemonhay-Evans. So not only are you then taking him out of midfield, where he's been brilliant for the majority of the season, you're then putting him in an area that he's got no hope of creating anything for anybody else because he's the furthest man forward. So it seemed a bit muddled thinking. And as I say, for me, Gary Johnson, it's his man motivation. And I think he's got a bit of a job now to pick up Rob Street, Billy Waters, Josh Umara, all of whom can probably feel a little bit aggrieved that they've sat there 45 minutes, seen that served up, and then had to wait for another 15 minutes to get on the field, which just compounded our misery, because I was crying out for 4-4-2 at half-time, get some strikers on. It just seemed that we wasted those 15 minutes. And to be honest, you could have turned off the stream after 15 minutes and gone to bed, because it was pretty obvious we were going to lose that game 2-1. Because as you said, at that point, our play just completely went to shit. You know, no first touch, no passing, crossing to no one, crossing not beating the first man, set pieces not doing anything. It was just a frustrating evening. And, you know, if you're being optimistic, you'd say it's the fifth game in 15 days. You know, these things happen. But you can't look at one player who put his hand up and said, we're going to win this game, or I'm going to help us win this game. Just, it was just flat for every single player. And that's what was disappointing. Even players who might have had a point to prove, like Jake Andrews, like Rob Street, like Billy Waters, came on and didn't affect the play at all. It was just more of the same. And that's what was disappointing, that not one person in the 14 involved could really have an effect on the game in a positive light at all.
Yeah, I think from the previous games, we showed so much organisation in the way we had lined up. And to go into that game without a recognised striker, for whatever reason, Gary Johnson chose to make his mind up how he did. And it just didn't work from the off. And you've already mentioned about you've taken Lemonhay-Evans out of midfield and put him up front. He was so good at it, having the ball and driving forwards with it and having a striker and Whitfield and the main in front of him making runs and him slipping them through or picking up on scraps. And for the whole 90 minutes, he just had his back to goal. And that's just not what he is. And after a while, it got to the point where our fullbacks were picking it up. Moxie would look up and would just see Lemonhay-Evans, who probably didn't even want the ball. And I think they would then try to go and move away from our usual style of play and then try and move through the thirds. And the midfield just wasn't at it again. And I think Little still not quite up to speed. And Randall was still, I think he was solid, but he was kind of missing in the game. We've already said about putting, no one can say that they really played well. And I think it's just disorganized from the first kickoff. You've got literally booting the ball straight out for a goal kick. And then if you look at the two goals, we've spoken about them already, but it's just the penalty to begin with was so frustrating for me, is the fact he's running into the box and Aaron doesn't even need to go across. He's already being ushered out by Randall, and there's already two other players there. So I think he's surrounded by four, and Schering inexplicably piling in and just wipes him out. And it was a stonewall penalty. And then for the second goal, again, he's got sucked in, but because there was no one really knew who was playing up front in the front four, no one was covering back. So there was it wasn't even like it was an overload at the back post, and it was the left back who whipped one in flukily. It was the left winger who'd only just come on as a sub. I'd heard of him before, but you know he's going to be a threat from left wing, and he's just got to be the man who, if you're a defender, you've got to be picking that man up. And it was just over and over again. I mean, I've written down some notes from it, and it's just poor free kick again, poor corner again. And it was just basically Gary Johnson's poor decision making in the starting lineup seems to have affected everyone else's decision making throughout the game. And again, players coming on to need to make a point. I wanted to see Andrews really develop from his game at Barnet. I wanted to see him move from that great goal he scored and maybe even potentially start. Okay, you're not starting, but you're going to come on. It was a perfect time to come on. He literally walked straight up to a free kick in the dangerous area, and he just couldn't even beat the first man. And it just perfectly summed up the evening, really. And it was very painful to watch. And I think we had sort of coasted our way through the Barnet game, and perhaps there was just a naivety, and maybe this is the wake-up call that we do need. And Johnson's already said that we're not going to train before the game at Southport, and maybe he's right. Maybe that's what they need. And it was, I just don't know what you're going to be thinking if you're a striker now. What are you going to be thinking of that performance? You don't start, and when you come on, you don't really have a chance to make actually an influence on the game. And we've spoken already about Uma and Street, but Waters, I'm not too sure what he offers. He scored a few goals, but they're normally in three comfortable victories already, and he's come on to score some very important late goals for us. But again, he came on, and I've written down he's offside again, and it seemed so many times he just wasn't quite with it. He just seemed to get caught out being offside too many times, and it's just, I'm quite glad that I've had to sleep on it, and then somehow I've had to remember the game, and it's just very tough to look at it. But I think we are in a very good position still, and it's easy to run away with these negative emotions about a performance, but I think this will be a wake-up call for most of the lads, and the players who had a chance to step up and didn't, I think it's moves perfectly on to go into an FA Trophy game where nobody really cares about the tournament too much. It's going to be a good opportunity to play a lower league team they're only division below us, of course, but it's going to be a good opportunity for us to come out and go all guns blazing again and get back to what we have done in the past. And hopefully we'll look back at it at the end of the season and just see it as a blip.
Yeah, I think all of that is all of that's perfectly fair. I think we could probably, between the three of us, spend another couple of hours whinging about what we saw last night and the deficiencies in it and everything else. I'm not sure that's going to do any of us any good, particularly because I was not happy last night. Like you, I'm glad that I've had 24 hours to sort of process what I watched last night, because I don't mind losing, like everybody. I don't mind so much losing. I prefer to win, obviously, but I don't really mind losing football matches. You're not going to go through a whole season not losing unless you're Arsenal from those few years ago, but you aren't going to go through a season as Torquay United and not lose games. It's losing in that manner that did for me. So yeah, I'm glad I've had a day to think about it before having to come on here and talk about it and articulate some sensible feelings beyond just sighing and looking grumpy and sort of kicking the dog or what have you. So yeah, that puts those two games to bed. I'm pleased about it. Three points from six, not what I wanted. I wanted it really. I wanted four. I didn't actually think we'd beat Altrincham because they're, as I say, I know that they're a decent side and they're right up there and they've done well against the big teams in the division. But three it is, and we move on to the FA Trophy and then a league game against Wealdstone, which Ben has very kindly previewed for us.
Yeah, so our trip to Southport, who are currently 17th out of 22 teams in the National League North. This season, they've played 14, won 4, drawn 4, lost 6, scored 16 and conceded 19. They've only played 14, of course, because both the National League South and North have not had any games for the last couple of weeks because they decided with the funding issues and whatever else to suspend for a couple of weeks. As it stands, we're going up there without Carl Cameron and Connor Lemonhay Evans, who both picked up their fifth bookings yesterday. And in the route to where they are now, Southport have had three away victories, away to Marine. They beat Spennymoor Athletic on penalties. And in the last round, they beat Halifax at the Shea. Now, there's been a little bit of controversy because Southport's one of the areas in the UK with the new COVID variant. They have offered to pay for any testing that needs to be done on talking to players to make sure that we feel safe when we're up there. So I don't think that's going to stop us going up there. For me, there's two trains of thought with a trophy game. Either it's an absolutely brilliant match to have after last night and a chance for a couple of players to get some confidence boosting goals and players who had a little bit of a ragged night last night to get some form back. Or it is a complete and utter horrible distraction, which we don't need. So close to yet another league match on Tuesday against Wealdstone. I would probably say it's the latter because you don't want to go up there with them not having played for a couple of weeks and wanting to beat one, get a big scalp. And you don't want to go up there and have some part-timer boot one of your better players up in the air and injure them. That's what you don't need. So I would prefer, having had just had five games in 15 days, I would prefer to have the week's rest and prepare properly for Wealdstone, knowing we need to get 3 points out of that game personally, especially with our squad as being stretched as it is and not really having the players to come in to give some of our players who need protecting games off. I think we're going to see plenty of players who you'd rather think, let's wrap up in cotton wool. Then we're probably going to see quite a lot of them starting, and then hopefully that doesn't backfire.
Well, yeah, I mean, here's hoping. I can well imagine a situation where one of Southport's players who hasn't kicked a ball for a couple of weeks gets one wrong, gets a tackle wrong, goes in, does some real damage to one of our players. You know, maybe goes in for a challenge with Armani Little or something and redoes something to Armani Little, not maliciously, but just through not having kicked a ball for a fortnight and probably having on his mind that the teams in his division are almost certainly going to, when push comes to shove, vote to null and void the league. It might be his only chance to impress if his contract is up or he's looking for a move or something. Or I could probably get one last real good go in here against National League opposition, flying high, doing well, tries a little bit too hard, catches, as I say, an Armani Little or a, there's no Lemony Evans, but any one of them, Whitfield on the main, one of our sort of more dangerous ball on a deck type players, and sort of does something stupid. I'm certainly not going to suggest that they would do it maliciously or intentionally, but with the difference in ability level that might, and the gap that Southport players have had, I'm a little bit worried about sending too many of the first team up. I wouldn't be bothered about going out at this stage, principally because if they cancel the non-leagues North and South, they're going to have to can the trophy anyway, because what about teams who are in that competition still but are going to go on furlough or are going to be, the clubs are going to be closed down. you absolutely can't say to Southport, if they get through, right, well, we're not going to let you play for the last fortnight. You're then going to have to play one game against Torquay. Chances are, given, we'll probably come to this in a minute on any other business, but given the number of clubs I've seen who are saying in the non-leagues, North and South, who are saying, well, we're not going to restart on Saturday. We're not playing until the funding situation is resumed. We're not having a fortnight off, playing for a month, the 28 days while the votes are counted, and then not playing anymore. That's daft. We'll just have 6 weeks off. And if the league restarts, then the league restarts, but it won't. They're going to have to bin the trophy anyway if the North and South vote to can the league. So we might as well go out, to be honest. I really don't know why, with us in the position we're in, with all the games we've played, quite why we don't do a yovel and have a mysterious outbreak of COVID or potential COVID that we have to have testing for. Sorry, the results aren't back. Congratulations, Southport. Congratulations on taking our place or your place in the next round. And just forget it. We can win. We'll win the FA Cup next year. How about that? Instead of bothering with the FA Trophy this year. That's what I think. Anyway, I'm not sure how Tom feels, but...
No, I think I'm equally apprehensive about it. However, I think if we're going to look at it from a different perspective, this is a good opportunity to bounce back, isn't it? And I think one of Gary Johnson's philosophies has always been, whenever he wants to play a game, he always wants to win it. And I think he's obviously going to still go for it. I think he's said throughout the season, in our previous games we've played in the FA Trophy, he's played relatively strong teams. And with the suspensions we've got coming in, and for Cameron especially, and Lemonet Evans, that it's going to be a good chance to them to use up their booking and get them back. I can see the argument for saying that all our players have COVID and skipping it. I just know that's not something that he would want to do. And I think I'm in the same party, but I want to see us, whenever we play, I want to see us try and win the game. I think in the past, we've certainly seen important players that have been injured in relatively pointless games. But in the season we're having, where we are top of the league, it's another opportunity to win a game. I don't see why you wouldn't want to carry it on. And I think that's what he will do. I think on a selfish fan perspective, I'd quite like us to just, if we could just go out at the semi-final stage, I think it'd be very painful, even if it is an FA Trophy final, and we probably were all there when we lost to Ebbsfleet. But if we were missing out on an away day to Wembley due to the pandemic, then it'd be even more frustrating. So one hand wants me to win as many games as possible and avoid all the injuries, because we could easily sit here on Sunday and look back, reflect on a 6-0 win that's got Waters and Street both scoring hat-tricks and their confidence is through the roof, and we're going into Wealdstone now on a completely different foot. But I think there's a lot of realistic views in the Torquay fan base, and probably just football fans in general, that a game that doesn't matter too much to anyone is more of a threat than an opportunity. And Southport will want a big scalp, won't they? And I just think it's going to be I think everyone's going to be a bit more anxious for an actual Torquay game for once, not because of the result, more of the state of the players following the game. So I think I'm in the park where I want us to play 4-4-2. I want to see us get some minutes in properly for Street and Waters together. I know we've said we've been crying out for it for a while, and it'd be a change of system, but it'd be something to try, wouldn't it? And maybe even 4-3-3 with Umar, I don't know. But obviously we're going to have to play a striker now, unless he's going to find someone else to go up front now for Lemonet Evans, which would be a real insult to our strikers. Feeling confident about it, looking forward to us cleansing the palate, forgetting about Orchard and winning this on Saturday and moving on to Wealdstone.
I think what Tom says is right. I mean, if we can get strikers scoring goals, then that's got to be the main thing. Because we know, especially Billy Waters can score goals. We've seen it. We just need to get him in sync with the rest of the team. And I was just thinking about strikers earlier and about Danny Wright. And Danny Wright didn't score many goals at the start of the season. It took him a while to get going. But because he was up there and still providing other things, you forgive the lack of goals as long as the rest of the team scoring, which we were at the beginning of the season. And then finally, you know, we managed to get him into sync with the rest of the team, and his goals followed. And I think really that Umira or Street or Waters could be the same. I mean, if Street had just popped that one against Barnett in when it came over the top and he hooked it wide, if they'd gone in, then no one else would have been talking about him being rubbish or having a crap game, because fans just think that strikers should be based purely on goals. And so it just needs something to go full in the box, just a prod in from 6 yards, ball falls at his feet, and he'll be on his way. I believe that for any of our strikers, and I believe that of Amira, who got terrible stick for his performance against Notts County, but it was just a Nats foreskin away from putting it in the back of the net. That's all it was. Yeah. It wasn't him. But, okay, it was, you know, it was a bit of
backwards from the edge of the 6 yard box.
Wow. I mean, yes. I mean, technically, it was harder to do what he did than what he should have done.
No, you're right.
We didn't create anything that gilt edge last night, because we didn't have a striker who should be taking up striker positions to get on the edge of midfielders, knowing how to supply a striker. Which is what's the point I'm trying to make, is that when you have a striker playing up front, you know how to feed a striker, and the striker knows where to stand in order to be fed.
Yeah, you've got to be there to miss them, and they've got to be created for you to miss them. And that was what we didn't do last night. We didn't have either of those elements. Obviously we all want, if that happens again, we want Waters just to touch it in the back of the net. But not Waters, Umira, just to touch it in the back of the net. But we went one further last night and didn't even manage to bloody create a chance for anybody to miss. So, you know, things can always be worse than strikers miss chances. These things happen.
So France win the 2018 World Cup. Oliver Giroud plays up front every single game. How many goals do you score?
None. Not a single one.
Not a single goal. And they won every game that they played. Because striker up there, occupying the space, occupying the centre-halves, creating space for midfielders. You've got something to work around. And, you know, I love Lemon Hay-Evans. He's a brilliant midfielder. But you may as well have stuck a scarecrow up front for us last night. Because there was just nothing to feed off whatsoever for anybody else. And it was just horrible to see. So there's a time and place for that experiment. And I hope we've seen the end of it. That's basically what I'm saying.
I wonder if maybe Saturday will perhaps have been that time and place. If we were going to try a 4-6-none formation, well, maybe against Southport, a game we didn't care about, might have been nice.
We needed a goal against Weymouth with 5 or 6 minutes remaining, and we took Amir off, who was our only recognised striker, and plonked Lemon Hay-Evans up front, and we passed it around him, and we scored a goal in the 6 yard box because we just put it through them, which probably was a plan last night, but from the very first whistle, there was none of that whatsoever.
It didn't work. I fear we've gone backwards.
Yes.
We ended up talking about the bloody.
I'm still angry. Still thinking about it.
So am I. Right. I tell you what. Why don't you tell us about what's going to happen at Wealdstone, and we can definitely not go back to last night again.
Okay. I can't tell you what's going to happen at Wealdstone, but I can tell you that they are 18th in the league. They've played 18, won 6, drawn 3, lost 9, scored 26, and conceded 39. So they're conceding over 2 goals per game. Their last 2 matches have been postponed, so they'll be fresh and ready to go on Tuesday. Before those 2 postponed matches, they'd lost the last 3 in a row, and they haven't won since December the 12th, which was against Weymouth. We won 2-1 at theirs in November. Danny Wright was subbed at half-time. We played 4-4-2 with Billy Waters and Umira up front, and Billy Waters scored both goals in a 2-1 win.
I remember their... their first goal very much against the run of play, and it was a really weird thing. McDonald came out to the edge of his box, and it was like a bit of pinball. The guy popped it in from 20 yards. Really strange result. I think I'd watched their game against Sutton that was on the TV. It was the late game the Saturday before. And they'd gone, something had happened. Had they gone 3-0 down and then got it back to 3-3 and then lost 4-3 in the last minute? Crazy game. I mean, any team who's been involved in 18 games and like 75 goals or whatever, he's just asking for trouble. I remember it was the same as us last year, where we were being billed as like, you know, the great entertainers. No team has been involved in more goals in English football than Torquay United, and we scored 35 and conceded 28 or something after like 15 games. It was ridiculous. Wealdstone were that team this year. They were, what were they, second or third when we played them? And they are now like miles down the table and going absolutely nowhere, going to be lucky to stay up if the season continues. So, yeah, of the teams we could have played, a fairly open but threatening side, quite a long way down the league, but not yet quite scrapping for their lives, potentially a good one. I mean, it's a bit of a banana skin because they score goals at a decent rate for a team are where they are in the league. Here's hoping that we can sort of get a decent 11 out. I'm not going back to last night's game, but we can get a decent 11 out that maybe features a striker. Who knows? And do the business on a Tuesday at home at Playmore without having to do any travelling and having had either very few first teamers involved on Saturday, or if they have all been involved, they've come through it without having to expend too much energy. And then, you know, a nice routine 3-0 home win against a team a long way behind us. That'll do me. I'll be happy with that.
Would you not take 2-0?
No, I wouldn't. No. I did a thing. I put it on Twitter. I was looking down Stockport's results. Another sort of team fairly local to me, so I get quite a lot of interaction with them. And I felt like I was recognising a lot of the scores and the teams. And it turns out that we've played quite a lot of the same teams, sort of as you'd expect at kind of the midway point of the season. We've basically played all of the same teams. And there was only a handful where the results had been noticeably different. The big one was Hartlepool. Hartlepool beat Stockport 4-0 and we beat Hartlepool 5-0. So by the old playground logic that I remember from primary school, we're 9 goals better than Stockport. That's how it works. But one of the results that I actually stands out in my mind from that was that Stockport beat Wealdstone 5-2. And we've only beaten them 2-1. So although you only get 3 points for it, I'd quite like to see us try and rebalance that a little bit by knocking in 3 or 4 and getting 3 points and getting a little bit of that goal difference back as well. Because I've got a feeling that the pre-season predictions of Stockport being favourites for the league probably hasn't quite gone away yet. I think of all the teams that are up there, Stockport are the ones we need to watch. And if we can do anything to better ourselves against them, we ought to.
Well, I think we've just got with Uma and Waters up front again. Then scored 2, the pair of them, didn't they? Well, Waters did as a strike partnership. They scored 2 in the last time we played. It's the perfect excuse to play them both up front, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think you look at it. I'm sorry, I know you said about they haven't played a game since December, but their form is still 1-5, and if you look at ours as well, ours is 1-5 as well. So if you look at it on that stage, this could be quite an even game. But I think I don't feel like we're in free fall, and I feel like they are in free fall, and I think they've sort of doing what we kind of did a bit last season. We started off very well, didn't we? First time back in the National League and sort of get your bearings a bit. And then I'm not sure whether it's injuries that have caused it, but for whatever reason, they've started to drop down again. And I think they would have been hoping for staying up at the start of the season, and then probably now they're hoping for a mid-table slash maybe the playoffs, because even though they're down in 18th, they are still only 9 points off at seventh place, because the playoffs are so big in our league, aren't they? So I think that should be a routine game. But again, I won't be too surprised if it isn't, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a beauty following Torquay, isn't it? Rather than like Liverpool or Chelsea or what have you, is that you think you'll win these games, and logically you go, yeah, that's, you know, we're a lot of goals better off, a lot of points. We've probably got a better squad than they have, but I wouldn't be surprised if we were coming home having been beaten on Tuesday night from a team that we should be rolling over. That's the joy of this division. So, yeah, the funny side, I don't know what to make of them. They score a lot of goals, concede a lot of goals. Here's hoping for a positive result.
Do they still have Fete playing? Sorry. Is he still starting right back for them?
He is currently at Wealdstone, yes.
Yes, excellent. Good knowledge, Tom. You can come back. That's, that's very good. Okay, yeah, Michy Fete, not overburdened with talent, I think.
No, he was a very physically fit fullback, wasn't he? Up and down, but not much.
Not much actual ability. He'd have been all right if he'd have been like a 1500 meter runner or something, but football probably wasn't his thing. Good. I think we've got decent chance. I think that's a nice little roundup. What we really need now is to move on to the question of whether we're going to have any football to play a month from now. The resolutions are out, or the detail of the resolutions are out. There are four of them. Looking at them, I don't want to blow my own trumpet too badly, but I didn't actually struggle too much with the wording of them. It seemed pretty clear to me. But apparently a lot of people struggled with understanding. So for the benefit of those handful of people who are in the camp of talking Torquay listeners and people who didn't understand, resolution one effectively allows the two divisions, or the two steps, so the National League Premier and the National League North and South, to decide their own fates individually and independent of one another. So that's a special resolution. Needs 75% of the clubs to vote for it, except of the total votes, to go in its favour. It isn't one club, one vote. It works on a partial basis of that manner. So the 23 Conference Premier clubs each get one vote, and then the North and South teams vote on it on a one club, one vote basis. But then it's like the Electoral College in the United States. So their divisions collectively count for 8 votes, 4 votes for the North, 4 votes for the South. So it doesn't matter whether every club in, say, the non-league South votes one way or the other, it still only counts for 4 votes in total. So that resolution, I think it's universally expected, will pass, even with the higher barrier, the 75% needed in favour, because who on earth in any division wants teams with no skin in that game to be able to decide their future? Nobody. Very few. I can see very few teams voting for that. So that you would expect to pass. That takes resolution 4 off the table, so don't worry about what resolution 4 is. Then the one we're concerned with is resolution 2, which essentially says if more than 50% of the clubs vote to can the league, we'll can it, null and void. No points per game, no put it on hiatus and see if the government changes their mind. It's just a straight write it off, start again in probably August 2021. Because there are only 23 teams in our division, you need a straight majority. So it'll be 12 votes, first team to 12, effectively first side to 12, gets the win. I expect that significant numbers of clubs in our division will vote to continue the season. A, we have many fewer financial pressures in our division because we get much greater revenue from sponsorship and various other alternative streams, and the streams themselves probably make some of the clubs in our division pretty good money. So I don't imagine that too many clubs in our division are struggling for immediate cash flow. And of course, the other issue is that we can we can still go up. You know, lots of clubs in our division are, most of them are quite a long way behind us, but to get into the playoffs, there are an awful lot of teams who are either in the playoffs or within, say, two wins of getting in. And that is going to probably entice a lot of them to think they can roll the dice and go for the playoffs. Why would you start a season thinking that you couldn't get in the playoffs? And then why would you be very close to the playoffs halfway through the season and think, no, we probably can't do this? And the temptation is to think that the teams at the bottom would vote simply to can the season because they're threatened with relegation. But if you look at our division, A, there are only three relegation spots this year because Macclesfield's untimely demise led to one too few teams in the division. So they, instead of reducing anything else, they simply reduced the number of teams that go down. So there are only three relegation spots this year. And at the start of the season, if you're doing sort of an honest review of the division, you're probably, if you are, say, Weymouth or King's Lynn or Wealdstone, you're probably not going to suggest that both Barnet and Dover are going to be right in the bottom three and that Yeovil will be down there, potentially occupying another drop zone place. So I think if you are like a King's Lynn or one of those clubs that probably expect to go down as a worst case scenario and stay up narrowly in a best case scenario, you're probably at this moment thinking, well, we're not going to have a better chance to stay up than we have this year. So we might as well vote to continue the season and worry about next year. So those that can afford it, i.e. those clubs in our division that are not physically destitute and simply cannot afford to pay their players, and I don't think that's any of them, I can't see a good case for any of them really voting to bin off the season. So maybe, who knows? I think it will probably go the way that we obviously want it to carry on. And then you don't really need to worry about Resolution 3 because that concerns the non-league North and South, and we aren't in those divisions anymore because we don't have Gary Howard in charge anymore. So we're away. We don't care. It's only Resolution 2. So that's how it works. That's what I think will happen. There are other sort of financial implications to canning the season as well. What do you do with sponsorship? Do you give sponsors their money back if someone's paid £20,000 or £30,000, which probably isn't unusual, to sponsor the front of a shirt, and they expect you 46 games for that money? You know, do you give them cash back? It might end up costing clubs more in lost revenue from streams and from everything else than it saves them going into the furlough scheme or whatever. So I wouldn't be surprised at all to see that resolution pass pretty comfortably. I've absolutely no idea what anybody else thinks, but that's how I see it.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there with it. In the long run, it will probably cost more clubs, not only financially, but just in terms of goodwill from sponsors and fans. It will cost them more in the long run to bin off all the progress of this season. It will cost the clubs a hell of a lot of goodwill and more money probably in the long run by just binning it off than it would be to keep going, even if the end result is disappointing based on what their expectations were at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, you're better off finishing, I don't know, ninth and doing no harm to your reputation or to your relationship with the people that are willing to sponsor you. It must be pretty tough to dredge up sponsors for clubs that don't get many. In Notts County, it's probably pretty easy. Everyone's heard of them. In the non-pestilence times, they get like 5,000 or 6,000 people a week through the gate. It's probably not too difficult for them to attract even international brands to buy Bordran Stadium, front of shirt, ground naming, boxes, whatever. But Boreham Wood, I mean, if you're the business developer at Boreham Wood and it's throughout the summer and you're ringing businesses saying, oh, yeah, we get like 400 people a week in the ground and that, we never on TV. Do you fancy parting with 30, 40, 50 grand to sponsor the shirts for a year? Or companies are just going to say, no, absolutely not. Thank you very much. But no, I'll keep my money. Thanks. So I think ticking off some of the people that are willing to do that, some or all of the people willing to do that, probably makes your job in the future an awful lot more difficult if you're having to ring round. So yeah, I think that's a perfectly valid point. How does it look from mainland Europe?
I'm just very glad you explained it so clearly. I've probably, like many, have sat there reading the tweets about it and couldn't really make anything up of it. It was just seemed so complicated and seemed understandable that they gave clubs 28 days to respond, because it's probably going to take many people that amount of time to understand it. But no, I think I both completely agree with you. I'm hoping and believing that they probably will continue the season. It's just funny. It's just been an absolute shambles, isn't it? I think it's looking at it, they from the start of the season they said, "Oh yeah, no, we've expected it as grants," and then now that isn't it the right that am I right in saying that the government have come back and said that there's no minutes to prove that we actually said that, but all the clubs in non-league believed that to be the case. So I think someone hadn't recorded the minutes for that or something has disappeared. So I suppose it's all very suspicious, the situation we found ourselves in. And then for them to turn around and give us such a complicated resolution, it just seems like it's just an absolute mess, isn't it? And the resolution that we all want to see is football carrying on. And the last thing we want to see is clubs going out of business, and it's finding that fine balance between the two.
It is. It's not been handled very well at all. It doesn't reflect very well on the National League. It doesn't reflect at all well on this government. I'm saying nothing more on that. It's been very poorly handled. And as usual, it's the fans that lose out. We're the reason football exists, particularly at our level. And at every turn, it's the fans that have to pay the price. When bad owners come in, another of my local club, Macclesfield aren't a million miles from me, another of my local clubs just up the road, Bury, you know, get treated very badly by a rogue owner. And there seems to be nothing that anybody can do about it, least of all the people it actually affects, the fans. You know, players go and get jobs at other clubs, and owners presumably make large amounts of money, and liquidators get paid their fee and everything else. And the only people that lose out are the ones that were here before all of that and will be here after all of that. It's the fans.
I think there's also, so I'll just add one final point on it. Ollie Bayliss on Twitter is great to follow for keeping up to date with everything. He's tweeting what people from clubs are saying at the moment. And he's just in the last hour said about Yeovil Town's chairman has said that it is my belief that clubs should hold off voting at this time to allow a new PR campaign, brackets, to receive grants that has been sanctioned by the National League or to take effect. So I don't know if that's another option that is there, that maybe that's why they've, is that why they've given us the 28 days to, or say us, I mean clubs, 28 days to vote. Is there a slim opportunity that, I mentioned that, a PR campaign, however, there's also the petition you can sign online, that are these going to actually make a difference, do we think? Do we think there's a possibility that a government can change its mind due to campaigns from clubs?
Well, the 28 days wasn't arbitrary. 28 days is a legal requirement, so that was always going to be there no matter what. But the hope is, and I agree with what you're saying, I think the hope is that in those 28 days, there's hopefully a better option than the resolution and the voting. You'd hope so. I mean, you can't tell anything really, but you would hope that the money could be found somewhere. I know it's going to sound a bit flippant to say that £12 million isn't a lot, because obviously it is a lot for you and I, but in the world of football, it's not a lot.
And with that, I think we have probably exhausted all of the usable material we're going to get out of discussing one good game, one very bad game, and previewing two matches. So my thanks to Ben Curry.
Thank you very much.
And to Tom Vosper, I very much enjoyed having you both on. And we will, we'll see you next time. Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks very much.
Cheers.
Bye.